Hey y'all, this is Stacey Pearsall, and you're listening to Everything, my podcast where I talk about, well, everything.
Hi, everybody. It's me. I know it's been a while since we've chatted. We sat down last time and talked about where the podcast was going. And as you know, many of you know, we had that sort of tragic accident with us all right before Christmas. And we've been kind of scrambling. And by we, I mean me. And you can hear Pickles. I'm in a different location today, just FYI. Normally, we record this up in my she shed area, my personal space. It's the place above the garage that I have my sewing machine and the TV where I get to watch all my chick flicks. Anyway, it's fully carpeted and everything like that up there. But today, I kind of wanted to keep an eye out on the horses. So I'm sitting in front of the bay window at the formal dining area, which in past podcasts, you've heard Annie and I discuss the need or the lack thereof of a formal dining room, but that's neither here nor there. Anyway, so I'm in the formal dining area, looking out the bay windows, watching horses. We have the luxury vinyl, the stuff that looks like hardwood, but isn't. Anyway, it's really clacky and clanky, and Pickles will walk across it and make a lot of noise. So if you hear that sort of in the background, that's just Pickles being a busybody. Now you're probably wondering where Charlie's at. He's passed out on his bed between the couches. So he's staying silencio. All right. So all that said, why am I plugging away and where is Andy? Well, Andy's away from the house for work. And therefore I am coming on the podcast initially by myself, but I'm not alone today because I have a special shotgun rider, if you will. He's remained behind the scenes with the podcast for the last, year and a half now? But he's someone we mention by name routinely. Let's welcome Steve Thoreau.
It's nice to be here today. It'd be nicer if I was in South Carolina than in the city in Texas, but I'm honored to be invited.
Well, I appreciate you. And I think you're a good substitute for Andy.
I wouldn't go that far.
Do you have a fart machine? Are you going to go banana?
I do not have a fart machine. I do not have a sound effects machine. Any farts you may hear are my own.
Well, thanks for the notice. And I'm glad that we are talking with a computer and the whole universe between us, because I don't want to smell your fart as much as I like.
Well, I don't want to smell them either. And I don't think they'll happen. I was just informing you out of courtesy.
I appreciate that. I, on the other hand, will blame the dogs.
Yeah, no dogs here. So no excuse.
And frankly, I know you say that you'd rather be here than where you're located in Texas, but I'm looking out the window to a very heavy rain and it's cold. So I would count your blessings where you are today.
Well, Texas was broken starting Thursday of last week. We were down into the 20s in the morning. It was nice this morning. I woke up to 40.
we're in the mid, low 40s, I would say right now, but I'm wondering, cactus and, whatever other type of plant life you guys have in Texas, it's like what desert adapted, can they sustain a hard freeze and survive?
There's not too many tropical plants here and we don't have too much cactus, unlike Arizona. So, there's mesquite, there's trees, scrub brush, and they seem to do fine. A couple of the decorative palms that I've had in my front yard last year during the hard freeze, they died off, but they're starting to grow back.
I planted a couple of avocado trees probably 2 years ago, and they haven't really done well. I'm told we are kind of on the cusp climate-wise for the survivability of avocado. And I did put a number of citrus trees in. So I have pink grapefruit, lemon, and lime trees. I had a hard freeze, which killed them early on. I think it was after the first year I put them in. And then the second year, I actually had a grapefruit grow, though it was not very edible. And of all the fruit trees that I have pear trees that are doing really quite well. And I will say that one of the pear trees was blooming already, but we had that hard freeze. So I'm not sure how well they're going to do moving forward. The only thing that I have that's actually fruit producing are my blueberries, and they're doing really good. And I want to plant more blueberry bushes this year.
I'm all for more blueberry bushes. Blueberries are one of my favorite fruits.
Mine too. And you know what else I like? Blackberries.
Yeah. Anything in the berry family is actually pretty tasty and actually good for you.
Yeah, they don't have sugar content, which is nice. They're pretty, you have to like sour stuff though. Well, blueberries can be sweet and not too sour. Depends on when you pluck them. At any rate, I digress. I've been contemplating about putting a grapevine in. You know, muscadine's pretty popular here. So I've been thinking about that. I'm only in the contemplative stage at this point. I still need to plant some shade trees out in my horse pastures, and I haven't had time to do that. So that's on my to-do list. I feel like the list is never ending.
Oh, anything in life, it's never ending. Something always comes up one day or other, and it doesn't matter what your plans are. Karma will step in and give you something else, whether you want it or not.
Oh, this is true. Yeah. So we've been adjusting life to Earl's regime, which is never ending. And I will say that initially I was feeling very overwhelmed because when he came home, I would have to wake up at like 2:45, 3 in the morning, go out and give him his first dose of meds, and then go back at 9 a.m. and feed, clean his wound again, and then clean his wound again at 11, give him his drugs at noon, clean it again at 2, give him dinner at 3, and then go back at like 7 p.m. and do wound care and meds again. It was like the most intense. Luckily, as his wounds began to heal, I've had to actually lessen the amount of wound cleaning that I have to do. But he was getting so feisty that it was like throwing me into the wall. He was being rather nasty about it. But I tried to put my feet in his hooves, so to speak, in his horseshoes. And if I had like an open wound in my neck, I don't think I'd want somebody sticking a syringe in it 3 times a day. Would you?
Definitely not. Think about how sore you get from a paper cut. Granted, that's hitting a lot of nerves, but just having probably the length of 2 foot rebar or 1 foot rebar in his neck? Is that what he's going through?
It was about the tract was about 18 inches deep. So
wow.
It was really, really intense for him. And it went all the way down to his spine. So I imagine like if you have a tooth ache, that's because the nerve is exposed or the nerve is being irritated. And that the constant aggravation, I kind of wonder if it's like that for him, that feeling, and then having like cold fluid pumped in. So I would like go through the effort of warming up the betadine solution that I had to rinse his neck out with. So it wasn't such a like temperature shock, because I thought like how cold things react to teeth. I don't know. Maybe I was just projecting, but I thought it'd be more comfortable for him. Anyway, it didn't work. He was still throwing me around like a ragdoll, and it became really dangerous. So I started talking to the vet about sedating him. And for a while there, I was sedating him, but over a long term, sedating him 3 times a day just wasn't going to cut it. So we cut back the amount of, and plus the necessity to clean the wound was reduced. So we cut that back down to once a day, which I will say that the healing really progressed once we cut back to once a day. But the whole point of doing it 3 times a day was to keep the wound open so that it was healing from the inside out. So I didn't want the outside to close up. I'm kind of bouncing around because I'm fatigued by it, but he had proud flesh, which for anybody who doesn't know what that means, it's essentially like not a healthy tissue. It kind of looks bubbly and it's just not the proper type of cells that you want to be regenerating in the wound. So the vet came out and cut that out of his wound because it was starting to close up the ability to flush the wound out properly. Luckily, once she opened that up, we realized that the tract itself had healed quite a bit, substantially actually. And when we went down to once a day, the wound healing on the inside accelerated. And I feel like it's just maybe a couple weeks away from closing, if not completely. So we'll see how that.
So his hide was doing his job protecting the insides, but that wasn't allowing the wound to heal.
Yeah. And the big question will be whether the wound will heal completely anyway, because when he fractured his neck, it splintered off a lot of little bone fragments. And if you've ever had a splinter in your finger, your body naturally wants to try and push it out. So it will like fester and swell and ooze in an attempt to like push that foreign body out. Those little splinters of bone that fractured off of his neck, if there's any little pieces left in his neck, that wound may close up momentarily, however long that would be. But then the body will naturally get irritated and try and push that bone back out and ulcerate. So we have a couple of options in how to move forward. We can take him to get a CT scan, which that means hauling him 7 to 9 hours away. or we wait to see if his body's going to ulcerate, fester, and try and remove the bodies organically. Because if we do the CT scan and we see that there's bone fragments, perhaps they might go surgically exploring to remove them. Or I don't know what the recourse is after the CT scan, other than definitively knowing that there's still bone fragments left.
Did they say how big the bone fragments were? Because it could just be a matter of, if they're not migrating, leave them there and he's going to have them the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm. They did not say, and there's no definitive way of knowing outside of doing a CT scan, if and how much bone fragments there are left inside his neck. I'm hoping that they all flushed out, you know, during the process of the, like the wound debridement and the constant flushing. And when his body was, you know, oozing infection like lava from a mountain.
But, wow. It's been so long.
It feels like it, but honestly, he got wounded like 2 weeks into December. So if you look at a calendar, it's really not been that long. It feels like it's taken forever just because of the toll it took on him and the amount of time that it's invested in his healing. But I don't know. I think he's come a long way you know, a relatively short duration. He's
definitely
super feisty. Andy got a little upset yesterday because I've been trying to take him on these little walks because he's been confined and getting a little antsy. And he got a little ramped up and a little feisty and started pulling away from me. And listen, if this guy could pull a 2,000 pound hay manger onto himself, he could definitely pull my buck 50 down the road pretty easy, which he attempted to. And Andy was watching it from the house with his binoculars. And he got a little upset. He's like, how is this going to be sustainable? And I'm like, well, to be fair, he's not even 3 years old. So he's super feisty age-wise, taking all of this being cooped up aside. I mean, he's been cooped up in here for weeks. Of course, he's going to feel his oats, so to speak, and get a little crazy. But it was, to be fair, very dangerous. I'm looking forward to a day when I can turn him out into the pasture and let him go buck wild.
Yeah, his mind says this is what I should be doing, even though his body's like, you shouldn't be doing this right now, even though you feel like you should. I think we've all been there.
Absolutely. And it's hard to look at him and say, oh, he's not feeling good, because he looks great. If you didn't see the hole in his neck or know the history, you'd have no idea the kind of trauma that he'd been through, because, you know, superficially, he looks really good. But listen, I've been there. I've had neck trauma myself, and people look at me and think, oh, you look absolutely normal. Nothing's wrong with you. You know, it's the sort of hidden injuries that can be giving people this false sense of, you know, the appearances don't necessarily match the intensity of the injury. So the thing I have to keep constantly reminding myself is that the inside of his neck has not healed yet. Like, how long does it take for scarring to calcify enough that would be supportive of him getting a little crazy in the pasture, and weighing that against his mental health, because one definitely impacts the other. In the course of my own recovery, I definitely made a difference when I was feeling emotionally uplifted, feeling better about my situation and actually, you know, having things to live for. And I want to make sure that those things are provided for Earl as well. I think they're definitely interlinked, and the speed in which he recovers will definitely be impacted by the zest for life that he has. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you could see a change in his body language in some of your Instagram posts where you were leading him around with carrots. And then even a little later, you could tell he was more sure of foot, that he was feeling better, and he was starting to feel like a horse instead of a patient again.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be good to continue to see that transformation. And with him wanting to turn you into a rag doll, like we said earlier, his mind is ready to do what he knows he can do instead of what he should be doing.
Yeah, he was being a turd. I was like, I need to train him. And Andy's like, what are we going to do about this? I'm like, I can't do anything other than continue to let him heal and maybe not take him for walks. Because if he behaves badly, I can't run the risk of hurting myself. Then everybody suffers.
Yeah, we know he does a good job at that.
So, you know, I want to get him through this critical care part, and then I'll make some decisions about how to get Earl right in the head again and see. You know, the one thing that I don't know, and is a big question mark for me, which I didn't address with Andy last night because I had to think on it for a while, but is I know for a fact he has post-traumatic stress from that event. If he hears metal banging, he flies through the roof. And it's interesting, again, having my own experiences with post-traumatic stress, seeing all of his trauma sort of reflected in my own and being sympathetic to those. And all of that reflected in him makes me, it's almost triggering in a way, because anyway, it brings up a lot of my own history watching him and being there to care for him. But what I was trying to say is, will he find a place emotionally moving past the post-traumatic triggers for him? Will he be able to find a way through those? And will I be able to support him through that? What is that going to look like? I know how to kind of navigate that with people, given my own history of it, but how will I navigate that with a horse? And so I've been trying to wrap my head around that. And was yesterday's outburst something to do with, you know, with that event and with that trauma, or was it a culmination of pent up aggression from constant being prodded and cared for and the post-trauma, and then having all this energy from being confined and just feeling like I'm overly done with it. Leave me alone. Like, I don't know. It was an interesting thing for me to ponder the last few hours.
Well, the word you brought up is triggers. And like you said, everybody that's experienced some traumatic event has a trigger that can get your mind going again. And the fact that he was stuck under a metal manger and hears that is definitely a trigger for him. I saw that you got new hay rings. Are they actually PVC, or what are those made out of?
They're vinyl. So they're more flexible than a PVC pipe, because, you know, PVC tends to be rigid. And while these are, they're firm, but they also, like, if you sit on them, they'll flex a bit, which is great. Cause I don't want anything that's too rigid. I want them to be able to bend and break away. You know what I mean?
Maybe there's a business, hardware for Brabants.
Made out of pure concrete.
I bet they'd even do a number on concrete.
Yes, I've known of a couple of people who had concrete troughs that their horses, their Brabants, backed up to and cracked them. So anyway, well, yeah.
When you need your butt scratched, you need your butt scratched.
This is very true. This is very true. Yeah. So the new hay rings that we have are made of vinyl. So while they are rigid, they're flexible. And if you sit on them, they'll bend and flex. And that's what we were really looking for was, you know, if a horse puts their foot through or their head through, it's flexible enough to give, and nobody's going to get hung up. And it's the safest option to keep hay in and keep horses out. That's the whole goal. But we'll see how these things work out. I took the weekend to assemble them. And I have, each pasture has a new vinyl hay ring, which is great.
Were the equines investigating when you first assembled them?
No, we had had those before, and okay, they were kind of accustomed to them anyway. So that wasn't, we had only had one of those on the property, but every one of our animals had been around that hay ring or that style hay ring before. So it wasn't anything new. They're all good. I'm hoping it dries up a little bit so I can actually get out and put hay out, because some of them need food. They need food, but we'll see.
So even when Andy's gone, you're preparing the meals.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for myself or for the horses?
Everybody in the house.
Everybody in the house relies on me to eat. And everybody outside, minus the wild animals, rely on me to eat as well. It's a full-time job.
Yeah, that's a good thing. You don't want the wild animals relying on you, because then they get accustomed to humans and that doesn't always go well.
No, we want to keep a nice cordial distance with our wild animals. I will say that we do have a herd of 11 deer. They're all does that hang out on our place in the evenings. You can always look out onto the front yard and see them hanging out. And we also have fox squirrel. Have you ever seen fox squirrel before?
Are they more of a red with black stripes and little bushy ears or?
No, these, I've never even heard of them before. They remind me a lot of lemur monkeys.
Wow.
Or like raccoon in coloration. They're bigger than a standard gray squirrel. They come in either gray with black points and feet and tail, or solid black with maybe like a white nose. They're really cool. When I first saw them, I'm like, what is that? I didn't even realize it was a squirrel. It was so big. I thought it was a cat maybe, or cat raccoon hybrid, some sort of
wow.
Crazy chupacabra kind of animal. I don't know. But anyway, they were pretty cool. And they prefer to live in tall pines, which is, you know, common, you know, makes sense because we have a lot of tall pines out here.
Maybe they should be called raccoon squirrels and not fox squirrels. Not fox then. Squirrels.
They do have the big fox-like tail though. So that makes sense. I don't know how their name was decided upon, but how do we decide on names for anything? Like, how did a chair get its name? Why did we call a chair or a window a window?
Isn't that an answer for Google?
Andy would say that. So Google it. Well, in other news, Charlie has surgery in about a week. Not thrilled about that, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be hard because in addition to the time he's out for surgery, I'm sure he needs a little recovery time. I've seen him working with you and I know you rely on him a lot.
I do. And, you know, obviously I rely on him physically, but, you know, more importantly, I rely on him for emotional support. So it's going to be a little bit of an adjustment because he's going to have to stay in the hospital for 3 days. So he gets dropped off next Wednesday, February 16th, and I will be without him until like Friday evening, something like that.
Yeah.
So that'll be an adjustment. And I'm, you know, obviously think about, I'm pretty sure, you know, the dogs have these surgeries all the time and everybody comes through it okay. But, you know, you think about the worst case scenario and with the crap luck that I've been having over the last couple months, I just worry about the worst. I know he's going to be okay, but I'll just ask everybody who's listening to keep Charlie in your thoughts and send him good vibes. That would be much appreciated. So, yeah, I will say that the drug regime that the surgeon has him on or has had him on, you know, pre-op has been really, really helpful. He's not showing as much signs of discomfort as he was, which is nice.
Yeah, it's always good to be more comfortable. And you haven't been pushing him too much. Luckily, you haven't had to go on the road. So he hasn't had to be so much a physical assistant as an emotional assistant for you right now.
Yeah, that's true. He's lived a life of leisure. I would say the most work that he does is when we go grocery shopping. That's about the extent of his service at the moment as a service dog. I don't really work him when I'm doing photo shoots or anything, or when I'm up at the barn right now, just because I don't want to risk further injuring his already injured back. But hopefully, you know, he'll have the surgery. Hopefully everything will go well and recovery will go well. And he'll be almost as good as new once he recovers. God willing and the creek don't rise. Is that what they say?
I've never heard that saying, so.
Really?
You'd have to. No. I mean, maybe I don't know what the reference is, and I may have seen it in a, you know, a TV show or a movie, but not in general use. That's one I haven't been exposed to.
It's one I picked up when I was living. I can't remember if it was when I was living in Iowa or South Dakota, and I think I had heard it in reference to, "I'll be there, God willing, and the creek don't rise." So as if to say, I'll come as long as the creek don't rise. Cause if the creek rises, I won't be able to pass the creek and won't get there. So it's just saying like, as long as barring any unforeseen circumstances, everything will go good and I'll be there or things will go off without a hitch.
Makes sense in a rural context.
God willing and the creek don't rise. We'll see if any of the listeners have any other interesting sayings that are regional sayings. But aside from that, the barn is nearly complete. We had the electrician come out and run a bunch of exterior lights and redo our interior lights. So the barn is like daylight when you flip the switch and I can see everything that's going on. The video cameras that we installed have been super helpful. So I'm able to monitor Earl and the other horses from afar, which will come in really, really handy because Leia is going to be having her baby soon. And of course, I'll be doing baby watch. So to be able to tune in and watch Earl and watch Leia from my phone is actually quite nice.
Yeah, they don't have an English accent, but it'll definitely be exciting and entertaining. The English accent was Andy's previous reference to you watching murder mysteries or TV shows on Netflix that have a British origin.
Oh, like my haunted British shows?
I guess.
Oh my word.
I am not subjected to those, so
I
defer to Andy.
To be fair, I like murder mystery shows and I love murder mystery podcasts. I listen to the following podcasts: Unsolved Mysteries, which is an OG show. Like if you remember those from the 80s, they were amazing. Did you ever watch Unsolved Mysteries?
Probably. There wasn't much on TV when I was a kid.
Yeah. So Unsolved Mysteries was always entertaining because they had some ghost stories and like UFO stories and of course murder mystery cases, but they've converted it into a podcast, which I absolutely love. Crime Junkie is another one of my favorites. I also like anything by Dateline. So Dateline has obviously the Dateline podcast, but they also have these little multi-series shows. One of them is popular right now is called The Thing About Pam. So if you haven't listened to Dateline's podcasts, check those out. I dig them. I'm a freak. I like true crime and I like ghost stories. And Andy thinks that because I listen to these podcasts and I watch these shows that I'm trying to plot his murder. I'm going to say this publicly right now. I love my husband and I do not intend to murder him. Just FYI. And I don't have insurance out of him. So why would I be the first suspect anyway? I also like...
You still need a solid alibi since you live in the middle of nowhere.
I have Wi-Fi video recordings in my barn. I can just hang out in my barn and be on Wi-Fi all the time.
But then you will have murdered your husband because he cannot feed himself.
Oh, that's true. A slow death. Well, I'm not guilty. I'm just putting it out there. I'm not guilty. I also like humorous podcasts. One of my favorites is called Smartless, and it has the comedians Jason Bateman, Sean Hayes, and Will Arnett. And they interview some, you know, pretty random guests, but I like their quick wit and sense of humor. Anything to make me laugh, I dig it. So that's me in a nutshell and what's happening right now. I have been plugging away when not doing horse stuff. I'm getting the After Action series sort of finalized. We have all of our guests but one locked in, which is amazing. Unfortunately, one guest had to drop out because of scheduling. So I'm interviewing for the final seat on the show and doing some set dressings. My good friends at Bespoke Cabinetry built the furniture for the set, which is nice. They're local folks. Buy local, be local, they say.
Yeah, they look good. You posted them on Instagram if anybody wants to see what they look like.
Yeah, the thing is that, like, they're low back chairs, so it won't interfere with the camera angles. But they're nice and wide and comfy, but they also don't have those low backs will prevent anybody from getting too comfortable. You know what I mean? Like, we don't want anybody falling asleep. Not that it will, not that our conversations will be so boring that people will nod off. Maybe when I'm talking, they might. We'll see.
Nah, you're a good storyteller. You've been keeping this up for a year and a half.
Yeah. And I think you could say thank you to Steve, or you can be angry at Steve for keeping the podcast going, because I definitely thought about hanging up my spurs, so to speak, on the podcast. But thank you for encouraging me to keep it going. And I think the once a month program will be more manageable for me. But I like talking to everybody and having a chat, though. I'm sort of putting it out in the atmosphere and hoping people care. But it's a nice outlet to be able to share the goings on around here.
And you have a lot going on. I mean, the last time I saw you was wrap up for Veterans Portrait Project. And I mean, you've just moved on to new things. Your property's been finished. You've had horses born. You've had new horses. And I think you've learned a little bit about what your sister's job is like those past couple of months.
Oh, I would argue that nursing people is a heck of a lot harder than animals. Animals are so much more forgiving. Human beings aren't. So I don't know. It gives me a glimpse, but probably not even close to the crap that she has to put up with. Bless her heart.
Well, and you only have one patient.
This is true.
The amount of time that you've had to spend, and I think you might be a little more emotionally invested in him too, because he's your baby.
He is. I love him to death.
One of them.
Well, he is one of my babies. And then I'll have Charlie to recover with, and we'll see how that pans out. They're my babies, and you're right. It's a little harder. I think it's harder when they're closer to home. So we'll see how it all goes. But
so are you going to have a bed in the barn for Charlie's recovery so you can keep an eye on both your boys?
That's the plan. He has a whole setup in the barn already. And I guess I misspoke in a way, because he still goes to the barn with me. I just don't work him. So he's always ever present if he feels up to it. Like there are some days where he doesn't want to like go down the stairs or be lifted into the gator to make the trip to the barn. So I don't force him at all. Like I'll let him usually tell me what he's up for. And but anyway, most days he goes to the barn and hangs out, and he's got a bed in the tack room, which is climate controlled, in case you were wondering. It's got heating in the winter and air conditioning in the summer, and he's living the life of luxury on the farm.
How much is that letting out per month?
The whole barn is not air conditioned, just my tack.
Well, but the tack room, that's enough for a person to sleep in. So how much is it a month?
Oh, you're asking me the price of it to sustain me?
If someone wanted to stay there, how much would it cost them?
Oh, to rent it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, if you're gonna scoop poop, then I might do a little, you know, trade. If you want to spend a couple nights in the barn, then you can, you know, scrape a couple pastures for me, and you can pull up a cot in the barn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've spent a couple of nights in that tack room when
I imagine, especially recently.
When Floyd was born, actually, he didn't want to latch. He didn't really know how to, and was getting weaker and weaker the longer. Mm. And so every 4 hours, I would have to get up and bottle feed him. And it just made better sense to sleep up in the barn than to make the trip back and forth, just so I could watch him.
Yeah, because the commute from the house to the barn, what, that's got to be like 2 minutes or so?
Yeah, I mean, in theory, it really wasn't all that great of a distance to travel, but, you know, getting up, going out there, going, coming back, settling down, and then making that trip back and forth, it was just easier to jump up, go bottle feed, and then lay back down again. I don't know. It made better sense for me in my mind at the time. So hopefully Leia's baby that's due, hopefully baby stands up and latches and she cleans and everything goes well, and all the ideal scenarios happen. God willing, and the creek don't rise.
There you go again. So well, I have a question about your project for PBS.
Sure.
Are all the veterans local to your area, or are they nationwide?
Nationwide. We have a veteran coming from Washington State, Oregon, Georgia, Ohio, Minnesota, Florida. Yeah, all over. Texas.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And have their local PBS stations been informed of the project, or is that a step down the line?
That is getting a little ahead of where we're at right now. So what we want to do is get the episodes recorded, and then we're going to work with their local ETVs to make sort of episodic events like around certain topics. And we're hoping not just where the veterans who are participating, not just their area PBS stations, but nationally. to try and have volunteers in different regions host a variety of events. So we're going to be touching on some topics where we'll have actionable items from, you know, this season we're not covering homelessness, but I would like to talk about that, which, you know, just as an example, one of the episodes is about transition assistance and hiring veterans. So we're going to have some actionable items about how veterans can seek job opportunities or occupational therapy and the organizations, the nonprofit organizations that are out there that can assist them in finding meaningful work. And transition as a whole is hard, especially for service members, because we're from the very first episode where we talk about indoctrination and what that's like and how transformative that can be and how lasting it is. And it's not something that you hang up when your uniform gets hung up, you know, at the end of your career, that these mentalities carry with you. And that makes transition that much more challenging. So we're going to talk about basically some topics that will be able to allow community to embrace and topics that we want the discussions to be continued in the local community and allow veterans to have more meaningful conversations with the community at large and to allow our communities to be more participatory in the veteran experience.
Yeah, anything you can do to help people transitioning to life on the outside after the military. I don't want to make it sound like a prison sentence, but you're used to everything being taken care of. Granted, you have to do a lot of that on your own, but I mean, from my own experience, I remember the first day I had to go to work, I was like, what am I going to wear? Mm-hmm. And then the next day you're like, I got to get something else to wear. What am I going to wear today? Just you've got such a routine and you know what you're doing when you're doing it. And once you're done, you got to figure out what you're going to do. Hopefully you got a plan before it happens.
Right. Well, and I would argue that the military, you know, back in my time, and I'm not sure how it was for you, I'm sure it was even worse, was not really the most helpful in the transition process. They set up this program called Transition Assistance, which they call it TAPS, and it's different for every branch of service, but the concept's the same, where they bring the VA in, and the VA is like, here's the application forms you need to fill out to become, you know, to transition your healthcare. And then somebody comes to you to talk about resume building and all this nonsense. Nobody actually tells you that the VA enrollment process is different from the pension process, that they're two different application processes. So here you are thinking that you did all the forms right, and suddenly there's a whole other thing you have to do. And that is a full-time job in itself for some people in getting through the CMP process. And then, yeah, sure, you can write a resume, but how does an infantryman translate infantry work into anything viable in the civilian community? That's a hard one to translate. So how do you reprogram or systematically change that mindset? Not only just on paper, translating it on paper, but translating that through meaningful training and something that's going to inspire that individual and prepare them for the second part or the second step or the second chapter of their lives. Anyway, that's where we're going with the program. That's what we're going to talk about. And it's for people from all walks of life. And we're going to try include people from multi-generational, you know, Vietnam, Korean War, Gulf War, and everywhere in between, and people of my generation and some of the youngsters that are coming out now. And I can say that because I'm 42 and I was, you know, I was thinking that we are in the month of February, which happens to be my anniversary month from joining the service. And, you know, I would have been well, like had everything gone to plan, I would have been well retired by now, which to be fair, I'm retired from service, not the way I planned. I'm medically retired, not Was it properly retired? I'm not properly retired. Not the way I had intended.
Retired, retired.
Yeah. Like not 20-year retired, like not pension retired, but sorry. Sorry. You got messed up. You're out retired.
Yeah. I know your pain.
Anyway. Well, everybody, that about wraps it up. I just want to let you know that we've decided to go on the once a month program schedule, and we've decided on doing the first Monday of every month. Hopefully I can keep that straight. So if I'm late a day or two, please don't hold me hostage over it. I probably overlooked the calendar, kind of like I did today, and let the schedule get away from me. But a few hours late isn't too terrible. And I want to thank Steve Thoreau, our sound engineer, for joining me today. Thanks, Steve.
Hey, you're welcome, Stacy.
And for all of you who have been supporting me with your supportive vibes and kind words with Earl's recovery and Charlie's upcoming surgery, thank you so very much. And if you have it in your heart to help us, you can always visit the GoFundMe page. It's Help Stacy with Earl's Recovery. That's on the GoFundMe. Just check out Help Stacy with Earl's Recovery. You can always go to lowcountryacres.com, and all of that information is on there as well, including other ways to contribute, whether that's supporting us through veterinarian fees and all that good stuff. Anyway, Earl's story's on there. You can see the ways to help. Keep Charlie in your prayers. His surgery is February 16th, so he'll need all the positive advice he can get. Until next month, I'm Stacy.
I'm Steve.
Be well.
Take care, people.